Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. No guest today because we have a lot of commentaries. We're always starting with health and nutrition and healing. Vitamin A can benefit TB patients, foods to fight cold. Australian study links junk food to impaired memory. Dark chocolate improves heart health. And strawberries show signs of helping your heart, plus a lot more. Always quality studies from independent science to show that lifestyle changes can make an enormous difference. Plus today, commentaries from Professor Bill Quigley from Dissent Voice, The Veterans of American Wars, What Happens to U.S. Cannon Fodder? The U.S. government doesn't want you to know how the cops are tracking you. Yes, if you thought the National Security Agency was bad, which it is, local police and the Obama administration are vacuuming cell phone location data from inside your house, your apartment, your car, and nothing is being done about it. Now, that's hard to imagine, but the new technology that they now have allows them to go in front of an apartment building. They can do it inside of a van. They simply point at your apartment, and all cell phone data goes immediately into their computer system. Photographs, messages, everything you have stored on there. If you're talking with someone, they're listening to your phone calls. Who gives them the right to do this? They give themselves the right. That's fascism. Why people are organizing to end, or at least challenge, the U.S. empire, by Kevin Zeese and Dr. Margaret Flowers from Alternet. The U.S. is now spending 26% of all of our tax revenue on paying interest. Simon Black, Sovereign Man blog. Why should we be paying interest to banks? They are criminal organizations, the major ones. We bailed them out. We gave them $20 trillion. They have no morality. They have been caught in every kind of conceivable crime. They've paid tens of billion dollars in fines. They then go on and do other schemes, and they get that money from the Federal Reserve. So it doesn't matter how much you fine them. It's meaningless, absolutely a meaningless gesture. Put them in jail. That'll get their attention. Take away their charters. That'll get a lot of people's attention. I forgot. The people in power are part of them. We'll deal with that. A story that has not been told in the United States, today it will be, from Global Research. Research of Felicity Arbinot. The ISIS rebels are in possession of chemical nuclear materials. The United States says it's minimal. Is it? They lie. You'll hear the truth today. And Israel has taken 44% of Gazan land, herding Gazans into the remaining area. Why? Washington blog. So you see, we have a lot to share. Time permitting, I will go to the phones so you can have an opportunity to share your points of view. Let's begin. Always with something positive and upbeat that helps us live a longer and healthier life. According to the Peer Review Journal of Immunology, researchers at University of California, Los Angeles, found that vitamin A works against the bacteria that causes tuberculosis. And while both vitamin A and vitamin D are antimicrobial, really strongly antimicrobial, it's really vitamin A that reduces total cellular cholesterol. That's another good thing. And cholesterol is stored in the cell's lysosomes, which are involved in combating infection. So when the lysosomes are filled with cholesterol, it's used by bacteria for nutritional and other purposes. But when you introduce vitamin A, you change that scenario. So this way, If you have been exposed to tuberculosis or have it, take vitamin A, and it can help you. And we should also be giving vitamin A treatment to people around the world who are infected with tuberculosis. Foods that fight cold, from the Daily Monitor. The ones that are doing the best job right now that have good science behind them: fish oil, the omega-3 fatty acids, garlic, onions, and vitamin C, vitamin D. According to this latest study, those are the nutrients that you should be having on a regular basis. Lemons and limes are also added in. I remember there was a time when a group of women in Boston, they weren't scientists, they were concerned parents, began to see changes in their children's behavior. The children became hyperactive. And as one woman said, when her children ate the standard box cereal, the sugar-coated cereal, they would, quote, bounce off the walls. I remember her saying that. That was 1976 on my WMCA radio program. At that time, I spoke with a Dr. Feingold, who was leading efforts to determine whether or not coloring agents, preservatives, stabilizers that are used in so many foods could have an impact on the brain, in effect, agitate the brain, causing some form of hyperactive expression. His studies were very conclusive. Along came a Dr. Alexander Schaus and a Dr. Schollenthauer, who corroborated that, but in a far more interesting way. They took away the artificial foods and the sugar from prisons and found out that the violence rate was substantially reduced. And they didn't do it just one situation. They did it in multiple institutions, and they also didn't do it in all the prisoners. They did it in a group and then compared to another group. So we began to look during about a two-year period that the sugars, the caffeine, and the artificial processing of food was causing people to become hyper. That lasted for about 4 years. There was a Dr. Mendelsohn, by the way, in my opinion, an outstanding physician, a scientist, and he was one of these very outspoken advocates. He reminded me, he had a personality very similar to Mark Levin. Mark Levin is one of the funniest guys on radio. I certainly don't support a lot of what he has to say, but he's just fearless about how he speaks up to people. And hey, good for him for speaking up. Well, Mendelsohn had that same personality. I mean, in-your-face kind of personality. And he had wit also. And Mendelsohn was the one who found that the vaccines were dangerous. He was doing work on exposing the dangers of vaccines before anyone else I knew of, and then food as well. And he was a pediatrician. And then it kind of all subsided, and we forgot about it. But we shouldn't have, because there is no question that the quality of the food that we consume will directly impact our behavior. Now think about how many kids have no discipline. None. They do what they want, they go where they want, they come home when they want, they stay out all night, whatever they want. Whatever they want to eat, they eat, drink, smoke, they smoke. And the parents kind of think that's kind of cool. It isn't. Because if you think that your children are going to get a really good upbringing by having the knowledge and wisdom of their peers guide them, well, then take a look around at so many of the kids today. Not all, but those who are just clueless about life. Now try to break them of those habits. A lot easier to prevent it than to reverse it. It's doable, but you have to do it as a family, and you have to be a patient, and you have to be understanding. You just can't say, stop all this eating of garbage, stop staying up all night, stop sleeping with the telephone under your pillow. One phone I saw had caught fire, cell phone could catch fire, and then you read the contract, and it shows that they can. but they're pulsing electromagnetic pulses into your brain all night. That's disrupting melatonin. Melatonin is important for the immune system. And then you wonder why you're fatigued in the morning. Well, what do you do to overcome your fatigue? You take sugar. You take caffeine. That causes a hyper agitation, so you can't really sit still. Then the teacher thinks you've got ADHD. You don't. And then you get on a drug. Now you're in the medical pharmaceutical paradigm, and you'll stay there the rest of your life. And you'll be stigmatized by it. Here's something from Australia. This is from their Telegraph Herald. Quote, "Your brain on excessive junk food might trash your memory. A recent Australian study suggests that even a short-term high-fat, high-sugar diet can impair the brain's cognitive ability. Published in the peer-reviewed journal Brain Behavior and Immunity, the research findings indicate that animals who ate a diet high in fat and sugar for 5 days suffer from impaired memory after 1 week. They had inflammation in the hippocampus region of the brain, which is associated with memory. And the hippocampus also provides clues telling people that they are full after eating. So damage to the region could help contribute to unwanted weight gain because you wouldn't know when you were full." The findings did not surprise the dietitians who worked on it. Quote, "Your brain is a hub of body chemistry, and what you eat makes a difference." Quote, "We've been telling people for years the reason the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease is growing is that we're aging as a society, but some researchers think there's another reason, that we're reaping the consequences of bad choices we've made throughout the years, like diets high in fructose and fat." A study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition suggests that healthy people who ate junk food for 5 days perform poorly on cognitive skills. Quote, "We really don't know if it's the presence of the junk food or the absence of good food that leads to the cognitive problems. There are studies that lead to both conclusions. Brain-boosting foods would be whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. They make omega-3 fatty acids. Fruits, especially blueberries." So remember, if there is sugar, caffeine, artificial sweeteners in the diet, this study shows it can impair memory. Dark chocolate improves heart health. All right. Quote, this is from the a major scientific journal, the FASEB journal, and they looked at 44 middle-aged overweight men consuming 70 grams, that's close to 3 ounces, more or less, of chocolate per day for a period of a month. And they were given the split in two groups, and they found that it made a substantial difference in improving their heart. So that's good. It's the flavanols that can help, quote, "maintain endothelial-dependent vasodilation, which contributes to normal blood flow." So that piece of organic dark chocolate can help keep your arteries strong, resilient, and your blood flow normal. Finally, strawberries, organic strawberries, show significant heart health benefits. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. Here's what it says, quote, "1 month of eating 500 grams per day of the Alba strawberries resulted in significant reductions in total cholesterol, the bad LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. Improvements were also recorded in antioxidant status of 23 healthy adults, while levels were reduced of 8-hydroxy-2-deoglucosine, a marker of oxidative stress. Through the present study, quote, we added new favorable evidence of the effects of strawberries after 30-day consumption on the overall improvement of the plasma antioxidant status." Okay. And by the way, there are hundreds of studies of why strawberries are good for you. One was published in Nutrition Research, Volume 30. from Oklahoma State University, 8 weeks of using strawberries. And this was a freeze-dried powder, reduced the LDL cholesterol. But there are just hundreds of good studies. Here's one way I would suggest that people get their strawberries. 500 grams a day for the average person would be a little more than what they would likely eat. First, you wash your strawberries. Cut off the ends that have the little green part to them, and then throw them into a blender. That's easy. That's a basket of strawberries. Then get some ice cubes and make yourself some grape juice, or have organic bottled Concord grape juice. And you put the Concord grape juice in the ice cube trays and freeze them. Now you take a tray of frozen grape juice, meaning grape juice ice cubes. You put that in with the washed strawberries in a blender. Add in about 6 ounces to 8 ounces of fresh, organic orange juice. If you don't want the orange juice, use spring water and blend it. It is one of the most absolutely thirst-quenching, especially after a hot workout, delicious ways to get your strawberries and your grapes, which are rich in proanthocyanins and resveratrol. It's just terrific for you. I use that all the time when I finish long, hard workouts, because I'll do maybe 10 miles on the track. I'll then bike for 10 miles, pressure biking. I'll do a 2-hour workout on the VersaClimber in the gym. So you're drenched. You're soaking wet. This replaces the electrolytes. It gives you energy. It floods the body with antioxidants. It helps reduce the oxidative stress from the exercise itself, so you get all the good benefits of the exercise and none of the downside. So that is what I would do. Throw in a little extra vitamin C, and that'll protect you even more. But it's delicious tasting. So that's how I would get it. One last thing. I had mentioned black cumin seed oil many times. There's reasons why it is simply one of the single most important things you can take in. It's called Nigella sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A. It's been used for millennia. In fact, it was found in King Tutankhamun's tomb. There are multiple studies on it. You can find one in the British Medical Journal, and they found that it's safe, it's effective, it helps against osteoporosis, it turns off inflammation, it helps women with menopausal symptoms, and I would suggest 1 tablespoon a day, a black cumin seed oil for women going through perimenopause or menopause, because it can reduce your risk of metabolic syndrome. And women going through menopause are at high risk of metabolic syndrome. And in fact, in one group of women who were postmenopausal, they gave 1,000 milligrams of black cumin seed oil. In another group, they gave a placebo. The group that got the placebo, there was no benefit, but the group that got the black cumin seed oil, it reduced their LDL cholesterol, blood pressure, glucose, total cholesterol, and triglycerides. That's good. It also can protect against heart attacks. It can create, it is a treatment against MRSA. It reduces brain damage from lead. It is helpful in the treatment of several types of cancer, including leukemia, brain, oral, breast, and colon cancer. It reduces seizures in epileptic children and more. So definitely want to know about that. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about what is it in wheatgrass juice that makes it so good for us, and why should we should have it, and also new information on how meditation can cut the risk of heart attacks by 50%. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a quick break and come back and have a lot of commentaries, and then I'll be opening up for you to share some thoughts. Please stay with us. Whoa!
what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon high seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from men?
Nice to have you all with us today. We have a lot of people who tune in, a lot of people who read articles from around the world. We're heard in 166 countries and growing. And every day we try to find the articles on women's health, on children's health, environmental health, on men's health, on aging, on social issues that can make a difference. We don't align ourselves with any political ideology. Just looking for the truth. And we publish dozens of articles every day. And the number of people going and reading those articles at blog.garynull.com or progressiveradionetwork.com are huge. Now, sometimes I find a piece that I think is particularly poignant. Yesterday, I found a short little piece, a video clip. There were two I found and put up, I posted. One was of a poor man in India walking, and you see he has no shoes, and his feet are kind of distorted because of that. And then you see this boy seeing this man sitting there putting on a makeshift shoe that he, you know, makes out of crushed, stepped on two plastic water bottles, and then he ties, you know, some string around it. The kid goes home, gets some money, comes back, buys shoes, gives the man a pair of shoes. It's one of those reminders that if we have something, give something. I believe that one of the reasons we're on this planet is to be in service to others who are in need. And it's for each one of us to determine what we have that we can feel good about sharing with another human being. My view is simple. If you have a gift, give the gift. If the gift is humor, if it's warmth, whatever it is, you're never less for giving more to someone else, and they're never more for giving less to others. And then the second clip that I showed was, it was a really unique one. There was a traffic on this road, and it was just packed with fast-moving cars. And over on the side somehow, there was a dog, and the dog was a kind of staying right on the side of the road, and a car saw it, reversed, and then the woman tried to coax the dog, and the dog wouldn't come. And so finally the woman got a little leash, went over, put it around its neck, picked the dog up, took it back, and her husband is filming this, and puts it in the back seat of her car, and you see her other dog there. Such an act of kindness. So thoughtful. And really move me. Once again, comes from the heart. I take time out of my busy day to see what's going on in the world that can enlighten us, that gives us some hope, that shows the world in a good light, not always toxic or negative, that there's something worth living for, that there's a lot of good people in this world. I posted a Brahmin 3 weeks ago, coming from a Brahmin's family, which are notorious for being disdainful and bigoted against the untouchables. I've said it many times, India is a country of dynamic, dualistic opposites. Magnificent beauty and serenity, healing and insights, wonderful people, but abject poverty and greed and corruption by those who have power. So you see the two dynamics simultaneously. Any country that would allow 5 million babies to be murdered each year, girls, always girls, and another 300,000 to be aborted because of ultrasound showing it, the wealthy can afford that, has not done a reality check with its own consciousness. That doesn't mean they're not conscious people. Of course there are who would never think of doing that. But you've got to deal with it, just like the rape of women in India. It's not dealt with because of the hyper-masculine, misogynist mindset that has controlled so much of the body politic and the social environment for so much long. But on the other hand, when you have untouchables, and the very idea that you still have a culture that accepts the word untouchable, accepts the concept that someone else is untouchable because of the class that they're born in, and therefore when they're walking down the street, they cannot walk beside you because their shadow will cause you to be contaminated. If they're bathing, you cannot go to the same water. If they're eating, you cannot eat near them. You have no idea how bad the untouchables have been treated. Now, few have. And by the way, one thing Gandhi tried to do is to eliminate this whole superficial, completely nonsensical idea that there are classes of people. But the Brahmin class has had some remarkably sociopathic members. But here was a man from a Brahmin family, and he showed what a human being should be. He went out and sought the poor, sought the hungry, all untouchables. And you see this man grooming them, feeding them, bathing their feet. He didn't have to do this. He chose to. Think of that. When was the last time you went out of your way to find a homeless person and help them? It's easy to expect someone else to do it. When is it time for you to do it? You can't watch that clip without being moved. If you have a heart, go there today. If you want to see some of these, go to either blog.garynall.com or go to progressiveradionetwork.com or go to my web, Facebook, Gary Nall Facebook, and watch these. I put 2, 3, 4, 5 up every single day. Also, I want to mention that I won't be back in the city for another 3, 4 weeks. And then I'm coming back and going to premiere this film. They're working on it day and night to get it done. And I hope that it will touch people. Because, boy, it touches me. When you're behind a camera and you're seeing people try to explain the circumstance that they're in today and where they had been in their life and how they got there and the way they look at life today versus then, it touches you. You can't help but feel their pain. You can't help but feel their loneliness. You can't help but see, you know, when you look in someone's refrigerator and there's no food, it's unplugged. Why is your refrigerator unplugged, miss? I don't have any money to buy food to put in there. I go to the market, get what I can for today, and I use it today. Wow. Boy, you never expect that. You don't see it coming. I've seen this. Now, if you want, you'll have a chance to see it too. It's in the film. I filmed enough to do a 26-part series. And so we'll be working on that after we get the major film out. Because I feel it's just one of the untold stories in America. The depth of our suffering, the people who are complicit, the people in power who have never known any of this suffering but cause other people by the decisions and choices they make. You ought to see this this segment where I confront some people on Wall Street. I think some of you will appreciate it. Anyhow, that'll be in about 4 to 6 weeks. At that time, only when I return to the city will I be able to continue helping people who are terminally ill in counsel. Until then, if you want counseling, if you need help, if you want to make some lifestyle and behavior modifications that can help you in life, I have hired people who can help you. These are good people with good backgrounds, and it's free. It's my gift to you. You don't have to buy anything. You just go in person, sit down, talk, and hopefully they'll help you. We've done this with about more than 20,000 people we've helped with some remarkable stories. The newest person who is working is John Alioso. He's a graduate, magna cum laude, in health and nutrition. He has a bachelor's in science in health nutrition. He has a master's in human nutrition, University of Bridgeport. And he's got a deep work experience. He's our latest person to come on board to help people. You can call and get help 7 days a week for about 10 hours a day. I have staff. Because this way, at least, not everyone is showing up in my office because you have no idea until you've been there. As it is, we have 20 people, 30 people, 40 people a day coming just to watch films and try to connect with something they can get insights in. I'm happy to help them do that. And this has been going on for decades. Call 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. And today you can ask for John, Larry, Sandy. We have a lot of good people. Commentary time. And I'm going to start with this one from Washington Blog. Quote, Israel takes away 44% of land in Gaza, herds the Gazians into a remaining area. I'm so sick of seeing how the media, left and right, have portrayed this whole episode. They talk about bombing the tunnels to close them, yet not once, not a word about the living conditions of an entire group of people, nearly 2 million, living in an area that is so tiny, so small, that we would never allow that group of people to be concentrated in that area with those unsanitary conditions where 90% of their water is undrinkable, where they do not have a proper sanitation system, where they do not have medicines for normal health care problems in their hospitals, where they're kept prisoner. They're not allowed to leave. They can't use the ocean that is theirs. They're patrol boots that will kill you or arrest you, where homes are invaded. Teenagers are arrested, and they've lived like this in this ghetto for so long, for decades, and no one talks about the context from which they want to dig a tunnel. Well, I'll tell you something. If someone kept me in an environment where if the only way I could get food or medicine or anything that I needed, I'll dig a tunnel. But they won't talk about it. They won't pull back from the very narrow talking points because they control the media. AIPAC controls all of Congress, controls the White House. So the truth is not getting out anywhere. Here's what the Daily Beast has to say. Quote, this narrow strip of land that used to be called the Gaza Strip, already one of the more densely populated places on Earth, is growing dramatically smaller. The Israeli military relentlessly, methodically is driving people out of the 3-kilometer, that's only 1.8-mile buffer zone, it says it needs to protect Hamas rockets and tunnels. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the buffer zone eats up about 44% of Gaza's territory. What that means on the ground is scenes of extraordinary devastation all across Gaza, eastern frontier, and in the north. These were crowded neighborhoods less than 3 weeks ago. Now they have been literally depopulated. The residents joining more than 160,000 internally displaced people in refugee and makeshift shelters. Apartment blocks are fields of rubble, And as I move through this hostile landscape, the phrase that keeps ringing in my head is scorched earth. It's not like Israel didn't plan this. It told tens of thousands of Palestinians to flee so its air force, artillery, tanks, and navy could create this uninhabitable no man's land of half-standing, burned-out buildings, broken concrete, and twisted metal. During a brief humanitarian ceasefire, some Gazans were able to come back to get their first glimpse of the destruction this war has brought to their communities and to sift through their demolished homes to gather clothes or some scattered bits of their past lives. But many were not even able to do that. End quote. Too bad that no network, not a Fox network, nor any other network, has yet to show the history or the context. Yes, you have some nut jobs in Hamas, stupid, throwing the rockets over there, because it does endanger. I value all life. I value Israeli life, and I value Palestinian life. But the trouble is that it's the innocent civilians and their children and babies who are 95% of the victims. So this is not resolving anything, what is going on now. Let's go one step further with that. This is from Felicity Erbinot from Global Research. Quote, American and British Britain destroyed Iraq for them, lynched the country's president for them, created 5 million orphans, 5 million displaced, 1 million widows, and now upward figures of over 1.5 million dead for them. They created mass graves on an industrial scale for them, with people's beloveds buried in car parks, gardens, patios, and football pitches. But now they are in the hands of ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. They pose barely a minimal risk, says the U.S. government spokespeople. We're talking, of course, about chemical weapons. The currently sanguine view of the U.S. government is in stark contrast to that of the New York-based SOFAN Group, a security and political risk consultancy with worldwide offices and operations stretching from London, the Middle East, Asia, Africa, America, Singapore. For them, quote, ISIS has become indisputably the most effective and ruthless terrorist organization in the world. On the 11th and 12th of June, ISIS gained control of the Al-Muthanna, former chemical weapons complex, where in the 1980s, Iraq developed weapons believed to be on par with then the United States and the former Soviet Union. Iraq scientists reportedly traveled to the U.S. and U.K. in order to gain the relevant experience with chemical munitions. By the way, I know that's true because I read an article on that. The vast Al-Muthanna compound, covering many acres, was bombed and much destroyed by the coalition 1991 Gulf War. Hardly the most intelligent target to hit, releasing untold life-threatening chemicals on the population, the fauna and the flora. But, of course, then as now, as the General Taguba was informed during his investigation into the terrorist activities toward prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison of U.S. personnel, quote, they were only Iraqis that would be exposed to these chemicals. However, according to a CIA report last updated in 2007, there seems every reason to be exceedingly alarmed about the capture of Al-Muthanna. Of the facilities which survived the attack were a number of bunkers for storage of the most dangerous materials. In 1994, it was found that, quote, two sealed cruciform bunkers containing the largest declared stockpile of chemical munitions, old bulk chemical agent, and hazardous material associated with the CW program remained. The surrounding area at the facility became a refuge area or junkyard for relics of Iraq's past chemical weapons program, end quote. Moreover, quote, two damaged cruciform bunkers were used to seal damaged chemical munitions, residual chemical agents, and hazardous material. Quote, the contents of the bunkers were declared to the UN, but never fully. The munitions inside the bunkers were damaged from bombings, fires, leaking munitions, and physical damage to munitions made the environment inside the bunker extremely dangerous. The weapons inspectors have stated, quote, the exploitations indicate that the storage area still remains a threat despite testing. Chemical storage containers filled with unknown hazardous chemicals are showing signs of rusting through and leaking. Key bunkers and facilities are currently scheduled to be sealed or resealed. Stockpiles of chemical munitions are still stored there. Let me repeat that. Stockpiles of chemical munitions are still stored there. The most dangerous ones have been declared to the UN and are sealed in bunkers. Although declared, the bunker's contents have yet to be confirmed. These areas of the compound pose a hazard to civilians and potential black marketeers. The contents of two of the cruciform bunkers bombed during Desert Storm showed severe damage due to the hazards associated with this location. The UN decided to seal the bunkers. Quote, USCOM, the weapons inspectors, viewed the contents of the two bunkers. However, an accurate inventory was not possible due to hazards associated with that environment. Thus, there is never a full inventory of the potentially most lethal of materials, and they were simply sealed in and left. The final paragraph concludes that Al-Muthaina was the bastion of Iraq's 1980 chemical weapons facilities. However, quote, two wars, sanctions, and USCOM oversight reduced Iraq's premier production facility to a stockpile of old, damaged, and contaminated chemical munitions sealed in bunkers. Okay. Well, I have a question for people in this audience. ISIS now controls it, and they can unseal a bunker. From The Guardian, quote, the last major report by UN inspectors on the status of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program was released about a year after the experts left in March 2003. It states that Bunker 13 contained 2,500 Seraphim-filled 120-millimeter chemical rockets produced and filled before 1991 and about 180 tons of sodium cyanide, a very toxic chemical and a precursor for the warfare agent Taban, end quote. Now, have these degraded down to where they're no longer toxic? We don't know. Are they still able to be used? We don't know. What we know is now ISIS has 2,500 Seraphim-filled 120-millimeter chemical rockets. Who knew this stuff was still there? With all the money spent in Iraq, wouldn't you think that someone would have had the brains in Washington? Oh, that's an oxymoron. Of course not. To actually take everything out and destroy it all? Should have. They didn't. So, quote, Bunker 41 contained chemical warfare mustard agent gas, 601-ton mustard containers with residues, heavily contaminated construction materials. The shells could contain mustard residues that cannot be used for chemical warfare but remain highly toxic. Okay. So what if the ISIS decides not to send a shell in the air but take the sarin or mustard gas, put it in the water supply? These guys are radical. They can think. They're not idiots. So, the conclusion is the lethal chemicals can be used, what, safely? No. No, and we're told, quote, there's no immediate danger. That's the message. That's coming from our administration. They believe it's all been degraded down. Okay, but we know that uranium is radioactive, and uranium-233 and through 238, there are six known isotopes, have a half-life of 4.5 billion years. So at what stage in that 4.5 billion years are they degraded? This is just a problem, and no one's talking about it. Another commentary. And then I'm going to open it up to our phone calls. This is from Trevor Tim from The Guardian. Needless to say, we have to go to England to get a good report on what's going on in America because I don't expect American news to cover this. They wouldn't. The U.S. government doesn't want you to know how the cops are tracking you. Quote, all across America, from Florida to Colorado and back again, the country's increasingly militarized local police forces are using a secretive technology to vacuum up cell phone data from entire neighborhoods, including people inside their own homes, always without a warrant. This week, numerous investigations by major news media revealed the U.S. government is not now taking unbelievable measures to make sure that you never find out about it. But a landmark court ruling for privacy could soon force the cops to stop, even as the Obama administration fights to keep its latest tool for mass surveillance a secret. The so-called International Mobile Subscriber Identity, Catchers, more often called the popular brand name Stingray, have long been the talk of civil liberties crowd for the indiscriminate and invasive way these roving devices conduct surveillance. Essentially, Stingrays act as fake cell phone towers, usually mounted in a mobile police truck. The police can point towards any given area and force every single phone in the area to connect to it. So even if you're not making a call, police can find out who you've been calling, how long you've been calling, as well as your precise location. And as Nathan Freed Wessler, the ACLU, explained on Thursday, quote, in one Florida case, a police officer explained in court that he quite literally stood in front of every dorm window with his Stingray to track the phones inside a large apartment complex, end quote. Yet these mass surveillance devices have largely stayed out of the public eye, thanks to the federal government and local police refusing to disclose they're using them in the first place, sometimes shockingly, even to judges. As the Associated Press reported last week, the Obama administration has been telling local cops to keep information on Stingray secret from members of the news media, even when it seems like local public record laws would mandate their disclosure. The AP noted, quote, federal involvement in local open records proceedings is unusual. It comes at a time when President Barack Obama has said he welcomes the debate on government surveillance and called for more transparency about spying in the wake of disclosures about classified. Some of the government's tactics to hide Stingray from journalists and the public have been downright disturbing. After the ACLU had filed a records request for information on Stingrays, the local police force initially told them that, yes, they had the documents and to come on down to the station to look at them. But just before the ACLU rep was due to arrive, U.S. Marshals seized the records and hid them away at another location in what Wessler describes as, quote, a blatant violation of state open records laws. The federal government has used various other tactics around the country to prevent disclosure of similar information. So this is what they're doing. They're using the local police to collect all the data. Why do the local police need this data? Why would any citizen tolerate all of their electronic data going not only to the National Security Agency and 17 other federal secret agencies, but now all the local police? And we're not protesting it. I'm Gary Nall. This is a short piece, but boy, is this important. See, I don't believe that we should pay any interest. This is stupid. I believe that what we should do is eliminate the Federal Reserve, let all banks that are not completely solvent go through structured bankruptcy, let their stockholders just take it right up the ass where they deserve, and focus upon supporting local credit unions and banks that are state banks that are controlled by the public. Then I believe that the Treasury should print all money and have no preferential money that's given to any corporation and no bank, and that there is zero interest. That's what we should do. Instead, here's what we're paying right now. Quote, taking into account total U.S. interest payments in fiscal year 2013, was $415 billion, roughly 17% of total tax revenue, just like the Ottoman Empire was in 1868. Here's the thing, though. It's inappropriate to look at total tax revenue when we're talking about making interest payments. The IRS collected $2.49 trillion in taxes last year, net of refunds, but of this amount, $891 billion was from payroll tax. According to the FICA and the Social Security Act of 1935, however, this amount is tied directly to funding Social Security and Medicare. It is not used for interest payments. Based upon this data, the amount of tax revenue that the U.S. government has had available to pay for its operations was $1.599 trillion. This means they actually spent approximately 26% of their available tax revenue, that's the federal government, just to pay interest last year. 26% interest we paid last year. To me, that's an unbelievable figure. The only thing more unbelievable is how masterfully they understate reality and the level of deception they employ to conceal the truth. All that should be forgiven. We should pay no interest on the debt. Let's say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Tim, your turn.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Good, good. I was wondering, Gary, one other thing besides my main comment on your on the surveillance ongoings. There was a fellow you had on who was talking about the generators that were maybe going to become available for houses and small businesses. If there's any kind of an update on him with the Venus Project, I think was the name of his project, and also.
We will be having Matt back on. That was only something that he was working on. When he is ready, he'll come back on, and we will do a whole program on that. Thank you. Let's say hello to Benjamin from New York. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Gary. Haven't heard you in a long time, so I came back. I believe seriously that when the Palestinians, Hamas says they want to kill all the Jews. If you were Prime Minister of Israel, how would you handle the situation in Gaza?
Good question. I would not go in. First, I would not destroy their electric power plant. That violates all international law. I would not kill children. I would not kill babies. I would not kill women. I would not kill innocent people. Hence, I would not kill 95% of the people who are dying, not only now but historically. I would not keep them in an apartheid open-air prison, the largest in the world. Instead, I would work cooperatively with them. I would work towards a two-state solution. I would allow them to have investment to rebuild their infrastructure, because the best thing for the Palestinian people is if they can be self-sufficient. They're very bright. They're very industrious. I'm talking about the rank and file. And then have cooperative leaders. Have your leading leaders, social leaders, educational leaders, religious leaders from Israel and the Palestinians meet and come to a consensus of what is in the best interest of both. Now, when you start giving prosperity to any group and you give safety and you give security, and if a person has a home and a living wage, and if they have school and health care, they're far less likely to be motivated to wanting to support a hate group. I am opposed to any group that wants to see the elimination of another group, and hence I'm opposed to Hamas's radical firebrand nature. It's just stupid what they're doing, and it's counterproductive at every level. But also, there is a far right wing, neoconservative group in Israel, in the Likud, and Netanyahu is certainly one of them, who are tied in with the industrial base, and who are tied in with the base that does not view a Palestinian as a human being. So on the one hand, you have Israelis who do not view Palestinians as human beings, and therefore anything you do to them is acceptable and has been. And you have those in the Palestinian movement, like Hamas, who do not view Israelis or Jews as human beings, and therefore anything that is done to them, they feel is acceptable. They're both wrong. You need people who care about people. You need people who are more humanistic. You need people who are more spiritual in Israel and in the Palestinian movement. And only when you allow people a right of self-determination, only when you allow people a right of self-sufficiency, will that change. Now, you can't keep people in these circumstances and not expect the members of those groups to fight back. It's going to happen, and then you're going to fight back in return. And also the settlements, the encroachment settlements, the mindset of this, you have all the worst characters in power working against the interest of the vast majority of both Jews and Palestinians. There is no sense of enlightenment And you're not going to have peace and reconciliation until you have enlightenment. So I would find those who are enlightened. And it's not now, and probably won't be for some time. But that's what's needed. You ask me and for the best, and that's the best that I could suggest. I appreciate your call, Benjamin. Thank you very much. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.